Hello, and welcome to another episode of Healthy Minds. I'm Julie, your host, and I've got two guests with me here today. If you guys can introduce yourself.
I'm Dr. Angela McKay. I'm the nurse manager for the inpatient adult unit at Howard County General Hospital. And I'm also an adjunct professor here at Howard Community College.
My name is Kirsty Wheelton. I am the outreach and education specialist at Humanum, and I am a past case manager as well.
Great. Thank you, guys. So today we're talking about the role of the hospital in everyone's lives, and particularly with mental health. So before we do that, let's talk about the stigma that a lot of media will push or accidentally present or mistakenly present about the hospital and what the experience is like, and a little bit about why people go to the hospital.
From my experience, I will say the reason why people stay away from the hospital and don't want to come in is basically the stigma that's surrounded around it, the shame they feel. Unfortunately, we haven't educated our youth enough or our young adults enough to know what it means to be able to come to the hospital and seek help. And unfortunately, with evidence-based research that's out there, it could take an individual up to 10 years to actually come to terms with knowing that what they're suffering or what they're going through is actually diagnosed or classed as mental illness. So education is greatly needed. The younger we start, the better. And we have some work to do around that, but this is obviously a start, and this will reach out to our college students, which in turn will eventually drift down to the younger ones.
Great. Let's talk about some of the reasons that somebody might come in to the hospital. So I think everybody's pretty familiar with feeling suicidal or wanting to hurt themselves is a pretty common reason to go to the hospital, whether willingly or unwillingly. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the other ones?
Unfortunately, we're seeing an increase of opioid abuse and overdoses at the moment. So that will bring individuals to the hospital. We're seeing an increase of gender identity issues coming through. And with our young ones and young adults, we have the boyfriend-girlfriend issue, the first breakup. We'll get to the point where my life is going to come to an end because this individual doesn't like me anymore, doesn't want to spend time with me anymore. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they under the mental illness that has not been diagnosed. Or maybe mm-hmm. it runs in the family. It could be anything from schizophrenia or bipolar. And we also seeing an increase in the family unsettlement in regards to parents separating or going through a divorce and how that is affecting our youth today.
So I know, Kirsty, we were just chatting a second ago about gender issues and kind of obviously it's made its way to the hospital, but we also see it in case management and residential. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about that for a second.
It's been like more and more over the past few years. I started at Humanum probably about 5 years ago, actually a little over 5 years ago, and I didn't see it a lot. But over the past like year or two, I've seen it more and more. And some of our clients have literally moved into our housing because of issues with their families surrounding mm-hmm. this. We actually have clients going through this every day who aren't comfortable opening up about what they want, who they want to be, just because they feel like the shame or the guilt that their mm-hmm. family is going to like disown them or not be there for them. And sometimes they're afraid to even tell their friends. And if they do find one person to tell, it's a big thing for them. And mm-hmm. that's where us as case managers and our counselors and staff just have to be there for them and let them know it's okay to be themselves and show them that there is support, even if it's not from the family who they really want it from.
Mm-hmm. And if you want more information on LGBTQ and their potential mental health issues associated with being on as part of that group, we have that episode we recorded a couple of months ago. And we're actually doing part two in about 2 to 3 months as well. So you can keep your eye out for that. Or you can go to the Trevor Project. Just Google that and you'll find a lot of resources there. So we mentioned opioids and we talked about behavioral health, but I think just, you know, whispers that I've heard that it's been drastically increasing visits to the emergency room. So I think you either have a ballpark or an exact number for me.
The statistics I have here goes back to 2017. I don't have 18 updates. And unfortunately, there is an increase. And sadly to say, Maryland falls in the top 10 of the amount of opioid overdoses wow. that we had in 2017. Mm. And from my figures here, I'm sorry, I'm flipping through the pages. We're looking at in 2015, we were at 17,000 that has affected Maryland alone, right up to 29,000 in 2017. So that is pretty sad, and it's something that really needs to be addressed here. And I am aware of, you know, of situations where the prescription medications mm-hmm. now are being monitored by various different systems in situations where we have patients that go from doctor to doctor or clinic to clinic. Providers are able to use CRISP at the moment to be able to look mm-hmm. in and see whether these individuals have mm-hmm. been to other clinics and medications have been prescribed. So they're mm-hmm. not prescribing two, three different right. times of the same type of medications. And obviously more education. We keep talking about education, but more is needed to even educate the parents that are on some of these opioids medications for one reason or the other, and the younger kids or young adults that they have in the house that have access to the medication cabinets, and their mm-hmm. friends come to the house. And unfortunately, most of these cabinets are in the bathroom. So you could go into the bathroom and open up and see all what is in this cabinet. So it's just being mindful of how we have these out that could be accessible to mm-hmm. our kids or our kids' friends or family members.
So I was reading an article just a couple days ago about the increase of just behavioral health, which does include substance use and opioids. And as we know, it's been declared a public health emergency, which is why we're talking about opioids specifically and not all the other drugs. We are going to do an episode on that as well this year, so stay tuned. But we've seen close to 50% increase in the last 10 years of emergency room visits related to behavioral health. So yeah. mental health issues and opioid and alcohol, any substance use there. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty darn incredible. And thank you so much for sharing that opioid statistic, because I work in this field yeah. and I had no idea it was that drastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I don't think the news tends
unfortunately, unfortunately, it is affecting it. And from the statistics that I had, we're looking at ages 15 to 24 wow. that are in those numbers quite a bit, which then in turn, you know, you're looking at, was it a purposeful overdose or is it a situation where they're trying to do the social media fun thing and then things happen? Because I'm hearing of there's a game called Skittles, where the teenagers come together now and they bring whatever opioid, whatever drug they have in their medication cabinet, put it in a bowl, and you just pick and take what you want, and whatever happens, they watch you drop or seize. It's pretty sad what's out there right now. But the record is showing that we're looking at 1 in 5 Americans that have been affected mm-hmm. One way or the other, which it's not good.
Right. Too many. So we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about what it's like in the hospital. So let's start with the emergency room is different than the observational unit, mm-hmm. which is also different than the inpatient unit. So can you walk us through what the journey would be a little bit?
Well, obviously, we try to encourage coming into the emergency room with an acute situation. And unfortunately, based on what the individual is coming in with, obviously, if it's an overdose, it's a situation where they're going to be going straight from the emergency room to probably an ICU, depending on the mm-hmm. extent of it, to be able to obviously care for on the medical aspect of things. If it's a situation where it's probably a mental break, it could be bipolar, it could be schizophrenia, they come to the emergency room, or they have displayed certain behaviors at home and they've mm-hmm. been brought in, or they are out at a party or mm-hmm. Have an encounter with police and the police have done an EP, which is basically an emergency petition to bring them into the emergency room. They will see with a social worker who will do an assessment, and a psychiatrist will also do an assessment, and during which time we'll try to figure out, does this person need to stay inpatient to mm-hmm. be cared for, how long they need to stay in roughly, or is it a situation where they just needed somebody else to talk to mm-hmm. and they've got off their mind what it is that was bothering them or what was affecting them? Or is it street drugs that they've tried maybe for the first time, maybe for the 50th time, and unfortunately this time has gone bad and now we're seeing a psychotic break based off whatever mm-hmm. street drugs that they have taken? Because unfortunately, especially with something as, we look at it as minor as marijuana, if it's laced with some synthetic drug that's out there, can then cause everything else from a psychotic behavior. Kids think, you know, they can fly and they're climbing up buildings and trying to jump down and, you know, this type of behaviors that you see. But once the decision is made in the emergency room, are they going to go inpatient? Then social workers start looking out as to where the resources are. Where is there a bed? And unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of beds available yeah. for mental health treatment anymore. Mm-hmm. we have gone through a phase where we've closed down quite a few state hospitals. Mm-hmm. And going into that, it depends on whether that individual is of age to say, yes, I want to stay in, or is it a parent that's saying right. that kid needs to stay? Is that a voluntary stay, or is that going to be an involuntary stay? Because that is two different things that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And on the aspects of the involuntary side, it's going to be based off the psychiatrist's decision that mm-hmm. this individual needs to stay in for treatment. And once they go into an inpatient setting and they are involuntary, they will go for a hearing, which means a judge has to make a decision at that point as to what the medical team have come up with, what they've decided that is wrong with this individual, and the suggestion that this person needs to stay in for treatment. Mm-hmm. And the judge will look at all the paperwork and all the assessments that's done and make a decision whether that person is going to stay for treatment, or if, you know, the judge could say, well, I don't think they need to stay inpatient. They could still be discharged, but have a outside resource. Mm-hmm. And then you look for what's available outside to treat that individual.
Okay. It's a good place for you to drop mm-hmm. in, right? An outside resource.
Yeah. So we've seen so many go through like all the steps, and we've seen mm-hmm. clients who have went in after we've seen them be suicidal or have suicidal ideation for like weeks, and they finally have come to the hospital, and then we've seen them come home the same day. And that's just something like very stressful for us on our side, because it's like we know what's going on. And recently one of my coworkers was on the phone with the hospital just saying, you know, this person really needs to be there because all this stuff has happened. And she came home the same day, and we were all sitting there like, oh my goodness, this is so stressful. So I couldn't imagine what you guys go through there. And, you know, hearing them say, oh, I just need someone to come talk to after they had told us everything and ended up there. Mm-hmm. So it's a little stressful for us when they come there and then get sent home the same day. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, we really needed that.
Yeah. I know the situations obviously depend on the age of the individual or mm-hmm. what is happening or who has brought them in. They might, you know, get to a point where we need more collateral. So we do reach out to the group home that they're from, the mm-hmm. residential home they're from, or if they're home with parents, we want to get more information in regards to tell me more, because this is, are we just going to believe what a 17-year-old mm-hmm. is saying, or is there more to it? Is there a best friend that they could tap into to get more information? Mm-hmm. Is there something that's happened at school? Is there something that's happened at home? And then we might not hear it from the parents, especially if it's abuse-related. Is it physical? Is it sexual? What is going on? So we might not always get, you know, the real truth from a parent either, if they're part of the cause mm-hmm. of what's happening to this individual coming in. So it varies from individual to individual, but I know for sure we try to reach out as much as mm-hmm. possible to who we can. And in the adult side of things, we need them to give us consent. Can right. we talk to this individual? And a lot of the time you'll say yes, and other times like, nope, I don't want you to talk to anybody. And then we just go in off then, okay, what's our gut instinct is telling right. us, and what is happening? Or if they're in the group home or crisis shelter place, is there somebody that can give us some information mm-hmm. about what's been going on with this individual? So it could be pretty challenging mm-hmm. and sometimes could take hours, mm-hmm. if not days, mm-hmm. to be able to put this information right. all together. And at that point, then the team will come together. It could be nurses, the psychiatrists, social workers will come together and make a decision based off what information we have.
So something that I noticed back when I case managed is that if I told every person that I interact with, call me before you do anything, they actually did a really great job. That was like the very top thing at the chart. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would get phone calls all hours of the day, which was frustrating, but also amazing, because then I was able to directly communicate with whoever was on right. shift, because yeah. gosh darn it, you mm-hmm. don't live there. Why not? I'm just
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah. it could be very challenging.
Yeah. It can be difficult. Do you mm-hmm. have any other suggestions that you would share for support people trying to make sure that the hospital is getting the full picture? Because we know that many people aren't like, hooray, let's go to the hospital, yeah. Especially our younger folks. So any tips? It's okay if
it varies, because I've had or heard of situations, even for my kids, I've got older kids too, where if their schoolmates or classmates are going through a difficult time, they tend to want to share that with another friend rather than talking to an adult. Mm-hmm. And what we need to encourage, or what we need to spread out there, is if a friend comes up to you and say they've been abused and they feel suicidal, or they're going to cut themselves, which happens a lot, or, you know, they've got access to drugs and they're going to take it, please try to reach out to an adult that can help and don't think that you have all the answers. Because you're also a child and you're growing up. And if you don't speak up, then you're risking that individual's life one way or the other. So it's how to speak up and try avoiding putting so much on social media, the time you spend on social media, which then affects how you're being looked at because of the poor stigma that's out there, just goes around in a vicious circle. So it's a situation where spreading the word more of finding somebody or knowing of somebody that that person that's going through the situation is connected with. It could be a friend, it could be a neighbor, it could be somebody from church, you know, it could be a teacher that they've come to confide in. And don't just keep that information to yourself. Reach out to one resource or the other that can be able to help that individual rather than regretting it. Being more proactive is what we need rather than reactive in the end.
So quick shout out to my favorite phone number in Howard County, 410-531-6677 is Grassroots Crisis Intervention. You can walk in 24/7 and ask for counseling. You can walk in 24/7 and ask for help with a friend. You can call in if you've got questions about a friend or you need some support. And it doesn't have to be a friend either. You could be worried about your parent. You could be worried about a teacher. You could be worried about me, your host, right? So anyone that you're worried about, these crisis lines are there and available for you to take advantage of in a helpful way. So you don't have to be personally suicidal to call the suicide lifeline, excuse me. You can call and say, I'm really worried about my friend. This is what I've seen. What do I do? And then they can help you. They can give you resources that are local or national and get you on the right path to help your friend. Because please don't take that on yourself. Even if one of my friends came up to me and told me something, I probably would go talk to somebody else, even though I do this for a living, because it's a lot. One person is not responsible for a whole other person. You've got yourself to worry about. So let's shift into where does the hospital fall in the whole mental health world between school counseling and therapy, psychiatry, residential places, communications management, you know, crisis shelters. I know that's a big question, but what is the hospital supposed to be doing for us?
I will say really, there's a lot of resources that you've actually listed there. But from the hospital aspect of things, is really trying to deal with an acute situation. Is this person just caught themselves coming? Are they seeing that they're suicidal and they've got a plan in place? Please bring them in. Please encourage them to come in or call the police and say you're concerned. In terms of whether it's chronic or this individual has already received a diagnosis, they're already on medication, then seeking help then from a primary doctor or a psychiatrist or the counselor that they're already seeing would be advisable. We don't want everybody just coming into the emergency room either, because then that's clogging up room for the acute patients that need to be seen. But that being said, we don't turn away everybody. We see individuals, but obviously try to triage what's our top priority here. Yeah. And in the emergency room situation, we focus on trying to address our kids, and then we're going to teenagers before adults are being seen. And that is what the system does and is needed in order to be able to assess that kid or teenager that has come in and try to figure out what the best route is for them. Are they supposed to go to a teen unit somewhere, or is this a situation where they need to go talk to a counselor, you know, and that's been addressed. But basically, my take here is going to be acute situations. You're concerned, you're going through situations yourself, walk in and say, this is what I'm going through right now. I need help. And we will provide the help that is needed for you.
Thank you. So how long, let's say somebody gets back to One North, which is the adult inpatient unit at Howard County General. So let's say somebody gets back to this unit. So how long do people stay?
It could vary. Sometimes we look at some situations and we say, okay, this was somebody that just had too much to drink and had an argument with their spouse either way, because you don't want me anymore, because you don't want me in the house, because you want to file a divorce. Or it could be a situation where they've run out of meds, and that's why we're seeing the behaviors that we're seeing, and that would be a quick in and out. A lot of the time, if they're going to restart medications, it could take 3 to 5 days. So we see that it's helping before, or if they're going to get a side effect, we see it before we discharge. But then we could also hit anything to weeks and sometimes months, depending on placements. If it's an individual that needs to go to a specific crisis home or a specific state hospital or whatever it is, at that point could take weeks at a time. But on average, my last data, I will say an average of 8 days, depending on what they're in for.
Right, of course. Mm-hmm. And just to clarify for our listeners here, the state mm-hmm. hospital is a different hospital system from mm-hmm. Howard County General. Mm-hmm. So you can't access the state hospital mm-hmm. without going through a whole bunch of stuff. And typically mm-hmm. you end up there as a result of the legal system. Right. So somebody walking into, you know, Howard County General Hospital mm-hmm. and saying, you know, that they don't want to be alive anymore is not going to result with them ending up at Springfield or Spring Grove unless mm-hmm. a lot of other things happen mm-hmm. in there. And so I just want to clear that up for a lot of people mm-hmm. because I think the media does a really great job picking the spookiest hospital buildings they can find and making it look really miserable. Mm-hmm. And so, oh, that reminds me. Let's talk about what a normal day looks like for somebody that might be on one North Ward.
Well, for one North, we obviously do individualized planning with our patients. It could be, you know, you get up in the morning, we encourage you to do your ADLs, you know, take a shower, mm-hmm. change clothes, have breakfast. We do communal breakfast, mm-hmm. so encourage other patients to come to the dining area and have breakfast. And thereafter, they will have their medication. Medications could be given out in time between 8 and 9-ish. Unfortunately, if you've come later, say you were admitted during the night, you might want to sleep in and, you know, you get encouraged to wake up still because the aim is to try and keep you up during the day so you're able yeah. to sleep better at night. Yeah. And we have various groups. We have community groups that we do. So we encourage all the patients to come to the community group and basically hear what the unit rules are. We try to discourage the use of touching individuals, or if you're not assigned to a particular room, don't go into another patient's right. room. Give the space and privacy that others need. Be respectful. Be mindful of your words so you're not, you know, affecting somebody else. Come to the nurses if you feel unsafe in any way. We have techs on the floor and, you know, nurses that you could reach out to. We also have a security that's assigned to our unit in case, you know, basically for safety reasons that mm-hmm. we have them on board as well. We have an occupational therapist who works with us 5 days a week, and he has two groups, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And whatever he does in the morning, he tries to let that flow into the afternoon. And after the first occupational therapy group, it's lunch. So it's pretty much staggered out as mm-hmm. much as we can.
Yeah.
After lunch is another occupational therapy group. And during this time, the psychiatrists are also seeing the patients. Mm-hmm. So you'll be probably pulled out of right. group to meet with the doctors. The doctors see everybody during the day. Mm-hmm. We also have a medical doctor that comes on the floor mm-hmm. if we have any medical concerns whilst mm-hmm. the patients are with us. There's dinner about 4:30-ish, and we also try to do a wrap-up group of the patients. Mm-hmm. When we do the community group in the morning, we try to encourage the patients to have a goal, mm-hmm. to say to yourself one thing that you want to achieve today. It could be anything from, I want to see my social worker, I want to be discharged. A lot of the time, that's what we hear. I want to be discharged, even though they just came in last night. Or I want to talk to the doctor. Mm-hmm. Or it could just be something as simple as, I want to get my laundry done, because we do have the laundry yep. services right yep. on the unit there. And then in the evening, the nurses will also meet with mm-hmm. the group again and say, okay, did you meet your goal? Did mm-hmm. we, you know, was there anything that we could have done if you did not meet it that would make you mm-hmm. meet it next day? And we have the AA group. We mm-hmm. have reps coming to do yep. AA with our patients as well. We had visiting. We encourage visiting at this time. It's between 7:30 and 8:30 in the evening during the week. And then over the weekend, we have 2 to 3:30 and 7:30 to 8:30. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, because it's a locked unit and we're trying to treat the patients and get them into mm-hmm. a pattern for their yeah. day, we don't have an open visiting
right.
policy.
Right.
And then we do snacks in the evening.
Very
and
important.
It's medications and bedtime.
Okay.
So it's pretty much what the day is going to be like. Periodically, you know, patients might not want to be in a group setting, and we could do individual things yeah. with them at that point.
Right.
But that's what we have right now.
Thank you. I feel like I've heard rumors of art or yoga or some other things happening, and I'm always like, oh, how delightful. Like, I'm going to come join you.
Yeah,
like,
we incorporate that in the OT, the occupational therapy does that
yeah.
With the group, which is pretty relaxing, as we right. all know. And it's a big thing right now for adults to do puzzles and coloring pages and stuff mm-hmm. like that, and how that could get you, help you with distracting
yeah.
your thoughts in yeah. general and focus on what you're doing. And it's been embraced quite a bit.
Yeah. You know? Well, great. I'm so glad mm-hmm. to hear that. I was jealous a couple of times that I had to go in to meet with my clients. I was like, can I stay? I'll bring my yoga mat next time.
Thinking of Zumba. I'm going to start
Zumba.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I want to start Zumba.
That'll be fun.
I'm gonna work on it.
Yeah. Everybody go to Howard County General, right? That's where stuff's happening. Let's talk about, really quickly in a minute or less, the difference between voluntary and involuntary stays.
So involuntary basically means the patient is willing to come to the hospital for treatment. Mm-hmm. That's the basic description that I can give there. And involuntary means they don't want to come to the hospital. They don't think they should be in the hospital. But for one reason or the other, it could be an emergency petition by a neighbor, by a police officer that brings them in. It could be that they're under the influence and they don't know what they're doing, mm-hmm. and they're in, and then they get to stay. This time the doctors decide that they will have right. to stay for yeah. Treatment. So basically, that's the difference between okay. the two. Yeah. yeah. Being willing and no, I don't want to be here.
Yeah. So let's say Kirsty here emergency petitioned me to the mm-hmm. hospital and you were my doctor mm-hmm. and I'm here involuntarily. How long can you keep me? Forever?
No. unfortunately, if you're involuntary and based on what's going on with your behavior or your actions on the unit, and if you're refusing medication, it could go to the point as going for a hearing the next week. Mm-hmm. So depending on what day you come in, if you come in on a Wednesday, mm-hmm. you could be going for hearing the following Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Following Wednesday. And then the judge then makes a decision as okay. to where you go. Or you could come in involuntarily mm-hmm. on a Monday, Tuesday, whatever day of the week it is. And a couple of days down the line, you realize, you know what, I know I need to stay mm-hmm. here. And you could sign in as a voluntary patient.
Yeah.
So you have that option at that point. So then you would not need to go for hearing because we're mm-hmm. seeing that, yes, you're willing to stay yes. here and you're willing to take meds if meds is off, mm-hmm. you know, is what prescribed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. So just tip for everybody listening, it's always better to be voluntary. So listen to your people. If they're telling you, yes. I'm really worried about you, mm-hmm. let's go get evaluated. Please right. take care of it way before it becomes an avalanche. Mm-hmm. Right. Worry about mm-hmm. it when it's a little snowball, right?
Yeah, I agree.
I sometimes explain it. I normally say, if somebody tells you that you see a broken arm and the person has a cast on, it's like, ouch, that hurts. You could just imagine that it hurts. Mm-hmm. But if somebody tells you they have a broken brain, are mm-hmm. we able to really understand right. what that means? Mm-hmm. And that is where we need to come in then and say, hey, at this point, she's saying she has a broken brain. Let's help her get mm-hmm. help with that. And we just need to rally around each other and probably mm-hmm. put down our technology a little bit more and talk, actually have a conversation. And you're able to watch somebody's body language, depending on how they are conversing with you. And you can see so much more face-to-face than behind the technology that we carry.
Any last wisdom to share, either of you?
I don't have anything.
Okay. And you talk so much, Dr. McKay. Thank you. So we're going to go into our self-care send-off. So what we like to do is share a self-care tip. And so I'm going to cheat and use the one that I just said, which is if you think something's going on, please go talk to somebody about it. There are so many different resources available to you. You don't need to go straight to the ER if you're like, I feel sad sometimes. That's not, you know, you want to go talk to your primary care doctor or a therapist or school counseling or whatever, or just your friends too. Would either of you like to share a self-care tip? Something you do for yourself, maybe.
Oh, I will say listen to music. And I don't have a particular music, but believe it or not, soca and reggae is great. It puts you in a good mood and it lifts your mood up and you could dance away in front of the mirror. Nobody else is seeing you and you just love yourself. Remember to love yourself and you could give yourself a big hug too.
I think one of my tips for self-care is definitely take time to think before you become overwhelmed, because we've got so much going on in our lives that it overwhelms us and stresses us out, which ends up in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So if you can just take 5 minutes and think about stuff, write it down, do what you got to do, mm-hmm. I think it'll help so much.
Okay. Well, thank you all for joining
you.
Me.
You're welcome.
Especially pleasure thank you here. To Dr. McKay for leaving the hospital to come talk to us. And of course, thank you, Kirsty, for being here. And thank you all for listening. If you have questions, you can find my email in the description. I'm happy to answer them. And stay tuned for next month, where we are going to talk all about emergency petitions and how do you do that? What does it mean? And, you know, what else can we learn about there? Wishing you good mental health.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.